Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas. Loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now. We all can't help but wonder what adventure lies just over the next ridge. A Nissan Rogue, Nissan Pathfinder, or Nissan Armada will take you there. If you're taking on your adventure in a new 2024 Nissan Rogue, class-exclusive Google built-in is your always-updating assistant to call on for almost anything. Google Assistant, Google Maps, and Google Play Store are built right into the 12.3-inch HD touchscreen infotainment system of the 2024 Nissan Rogue. Nissan's SUV has the capabilities to take you where you want to go. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeartRadio. And how the tech are ya? I got a treat for you folks today. I had the opportunity to speak with Bina Amanath, the executive director of Deloitte AI Institute. Bina is an accomplished technologist, an expert in artificial intelligence. She's a coder. She's an engineer, and she's a great communicator too. She has appeared on numerous shows and panels talking about AI. She's also the author of a book called Trustworthy AI. And this was a fantastic opportunity to speak with someone who actually has a deep amount of experience in the field and really talk about some of the big concepts in AI and get a little more perspective on them. And I have to admit, Bina's responses really opened up the blinders that I have on. And of course, I'm like a lot of people, right? I go through life thinking I have a pretty good handle on this. I think I know what's going on. And then I meet someone else who has had a different experience, and especially a different depth of experience in a particular field, and realize, oh gosh, I hadn't even considered some of these specific scenarios, for example. So I really very much enjoyed my conversation with Bina. She's also incredibly good at putting things in a way that are easily understandable. A lot of technologists, when you start to talk with them, they get really heavy with jargon or concepts that make sense if you've had experience working in that area. But if you haven't, your eyes kind of glaze over and you just trust that what they say makes sense. That was not the issue with Bina. She is really good at talking about this stuff on a level that the average person can easily understand. And yet also really stressing how AI is a very important component today. I mean, we're seeing it rolled out in all sorts of different ways across all different sectors. We mostly talked about business in this conversation, but clearly AI is everywhere, whether we're talking about facial recognition technology that might be built directly into the camera on your phone, or maybe we're talking about a personal digital assistant, you know, something like the Amazon one. I won't say her name because some of you have her and she gets real, like she perks up when you say her name. Those sort of things obviously have components of AI built into them, but we were really looking at things like processes in business where you might need to use automation and artificial intelligence to make complicated processes more efficient and less human intensive. And so, yeah, this was a great conversation, and I really feel like I learned a lot. I hope that you all enjoy it. And again, she does have a new book out. It's called Trustworthy AI, and there's a copy on the way to me, so I'm very eager to read it myself, because just talking with Bina, I felt like I was just scratching the surface. But you're going to hear all that, so let's get to that interview. Bina, I want to welcome you to the show. I am so pleased to have an expert on AI, trustworthy AI, no less. Welcome to Tech Stuff.
Jonathan, thank you so much for having me on your show. I really enjoy your episode, so I'm looking forward to having this conversation with you.
I am as well. And one of the things that I like to do is kind of set some foundation for any kind of conversation around AI, because in my experience, and I'm sure you've experienced something similar, chatting with people about AI, it seems like everyone has a different, sometimes very specific idea of what AI is. And I'm curious, how do you describe AI to people?
Yeah, that's a great question to start with. So AI is a form of intelligence that uses machines to do things that traditionally required human intelligence. So it is artificial intelligence, which is created artificially by machines.
See, now I like that description because it covers such a wide spectrum, everything from sort of the science fiction approach we've all seen about machines that seem to think like humans to a point where they usually become the threat. I mean, that's typically the way we look at it.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm sure, going to come into play when we talk about trustworthiness, because I'm sure a lot of people aren't aware how AI can sometimes be a danger, but not necessarily like Skynet from Terminator type danger.
Let me elaborate on that description then a little bit more on, you know, that next level down on AI definition, right? You know, the way I think about it, there are three types of AI. One is artificial narrow intelligence, which can do a very specific narrow task that a human can do, like sort a bunch of photographs, right? That's a very narrow specific task. So that's artificial narrow intelligence. And then there is a form of artificial general intelligence, which is a form of AI that can do any task that human beings can do, right? So it is pretty much everything that a human being can do. And then I think of a third category, which is artificial super intelligence, which is a form of intelligence which is smarter than all human beings combined and can do more things that human intelligence couldn't do. So when we talk about AI in the business world or in reality, it is where we are with AI. It's very much in that artificial narrow intelligence phase. But when we hear a lot about in the media or the hype and the fear, you know, it's talking really about that super intelligence phase, which is a form of AI that is smarter than all human beings combined and has more capabilities and human intelligence. And I think there is a big gap between reality and between where we, you know, we are anticipating things to be, right? And you know, part of the reason is, you know, artificial super intelligence is a lot of our human imagination, which is where AI was when I was studying it 25, 30 years ago, right? So I do think there is value in imagination. I do think there is value in thinking of worst case scenarios so that you can address it. But the reality is we still today don't have the tools or the capabilities to build out artificial general intelligence or super intelligence. We do not have that capability today.
I see parallels in this as well. Like I have a very similar description of autonomous cars, for example. Like people talk about autonomous cars like we've reached level 5 autonomy, when really I would argue we're still around level 2, creeping into level 3, but we are not close to level 4 or 5. And this is why I like having this kind of conversation right up front, so that people kind of set their expectations. Because artificial intelligence can already do incredible things in these very narrow uses. And I'm blown away by it whenever I learn about that. But I do also see the allure and sometimes the trap of extrapolating that beyond the narrow cases and thinking, what happens when this goes beyond that? Which,
yes,
it could very well happen, but we're not at that stage yet. But I think of things like
we're not at that stage.
Yes, I think of things like the image recognition. Like that to me is still an amazing thing to see develop. Like, you know, it is, ever since I started covering tech, the ability has grown so fast. Like I remember when, at least on the consumer side, you might see something that was like detecting a face, not recognizing a face, but detecting the structure that makes a face, and for a camera. And now, you know, that looks like Stone Age technology by comparison of what we're seeing today.
Yes, Jonathan, and I know you've been covering tech for a long time. So, yeah, you've certainly seen the early evolution, right? But, you know, and look, when I studied computer science, I did assembly language programming, basically using zeros and ones, right? That level. And, you know, the languages that I use, like Pascal and Fortran, Lotus, you know, those don't even exist today, right? So there's a whole evolution happening. And I do think there is a big component to imagine the future, so that we can at least go towards take care of the risk and focus on all the good things that, you know, AI and technology can do, right? So imagination is a good thing, but not the fear part.
And I think what you said kind of is a great message to anyone who's interested in really focusing on AI. The fact that you were working in assembly, so close, such a low level language, you get a real familiarity with what these machines can do and their potential, that I think you almost lose when you start working on high level programming languages. Like you get so focused on what the programming language lets you do. But if you've worked down at that low level, you're like, hey, no, I know circuits and wires. Okay. I am one step away from this machine.
Yeah, we have to realize, you know, just like, you know, when we talk about AI today, we talk mostly about the software, but the hardware is also evolving, right? We certainly don't have those massive computer systems that we had to program, right? So I think there is evolution happening in every dimension, and you know, it's part of the growth of AI or any technology if you think about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also want to know what you mean when you use the phrase trustworthy AI. So what is it that makes AI trustworthy, and what's the alternative? What is the untrustworthy side?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's something that, you know, as a technologist, I'm enamored by all the cool things that AI can do, because I just focus on all the value creation. Mm-hmm. But over the past few years, as AI started becoming real, I also realized that there are, you know, with all the good things it can do, there are negative consequences to it, right? And so I put that negative consequences in the under the bucket of untrustworthiness. Ethics is a big component of it, right? Whether the AI is fair or biased or transparent, explainable, but also things like, is it compliant with local regulations? Does it have controls in place? Does it have governance in place to continuously monitor for it going rogue? Because you know, Jonathan, today AI is mostly machine learning. So it's learning and evolving. It's not that era when we developed code, put it out there, and the code stayed static and its behavior was very predictable. With AI, the outputs can change depending on the inputs you feed, and it's impossible to train on all possible inputs. So trustworthy for me is, you know, really is when you have addressed, when you've thought about and addressed all the possible negative things that this AI solution can cause.
Well, I would love to kind of dive into a little bit more of that, because one of the things that you said that really resonated with me was the idea of transparency. Because I have covered this on past episodes of Tech Stuff, but the sort of the black box problem of creating a system, for example, a machine learning system, and you have this machine that's training itself over and over and over. Maybe it's adversarial training. Maybe you actually have two systems that are set against each other and you're training. And the issues that can arise if you have distanced yourself so far from what the machine is doing that you are unable to determine the process by which it arrives at its conclusions. And that, to me, is one of those pitfalls.
Yes. But I would also challenge it a little bit, Jonathan, because the whole synthesis of my book is that it depends on the use case. Mm. It is not a one-size-fits-all. So depending on where and to solve what problem are you using that AI solution, it is for that organization, that team, to decide if transparency is crucial, right? If your AI solution is being used to for patient care in a hospital system, then transparency is absolutely crucial, right? But if you are using the AI solution to predict when an X-ray machine might fail, and you're able to predict at 95% accuracy rate that this machine is going to fail in the next 48 hours, so call a technician, transparency may not be as crucial, right? So I think transparency is crucial depending on the use case. And that's true for all the other dimensions as well, even fairness and bias, which we hear a lot about. So it really depends on the use case that you're using the AI for.
Hey there, Jonathan, back at the home studio, just here to say we are going to take a quick break, but we'll be back with more with Beena Aminoth, the executive director of Deloitte AI Institute.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
A spirit of adventure lives inside of us. Nissan's SUVs have the capabilities to transform your spirit of adventure into actual rubber meets the road into the wild, true blue, real life adventure. You just need a Nissan and a plan. Or better yet, just a Nissan. You can hop into a Nissan Rogue and discover what comes next. Don't worry, the Nissan Rogue has your back. Class-exclusive Google built-in is your always-updating assistant to call on for almost anything. Just climb in and go. No need to connect your phone. Google Assistant, Google Maps, and Google Play Store are built right into the 12.3-inch HD touchscreen infotainment system of the new 2024 Nissan Rogue. No matter where you roam, you'll stay connected to home. Life is one huge adventure, and every day is a little one. No matter if the ride you're on is big or small, a Nissan Rogue, Nissan Pathfinder, or Nissan Armada can elevate your adventure and push your limits to something new. Your next adventure is waiting for you. Get in a Nissan SUV and go. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Bias doesn't necessarily mean negative depending upon the use case of the technology. In some cases, you need to have a biased system because it's specifically meant to be weighted to do one thing versus another, and without the bias, it doesn't do that. But the way we typically hear about bias is when it is making a negative impact, when it's something like the facial recognition technologies, we've heard plenty about that. So it is interesting to me. And I'm curious, like, what are some of the uses of AI you're seeing in technology now that you find really exciting?
Yeah. No, I think, you know, we're still very early on in this technology evolution. And there are still so many use cases to be solved, so many industries to take AI to, right? To your point about bias and its relevance, I completely agree with you that, you know, it depends on the use case. And it goes back to that first question we talked about, right? How AI is really emulating human intelligence, which means that it is going to carry over the biases of the humans that are building it, right? But as a business or as an organization who's looking to use an AI solution or who's looking to develop an AI solution, they really have to bring together the stakeholders to discuss and decide how crucial is fairness or unbiasedness important in this particular AI use case. An easy one out is if it doesn't involve human data, then you probably don't have to worry as bias is a factor and address it. And if it does involve human data, then again, there is weightage involved, right? If there is biased in an algorithm that is providing personalized marketing, that there is a weight to it. And if there is bias in an algorithm that is supporting law enforcement decisions, that's a higher weight, right? And it's really about weighting it, weighing it and deciding which ones are the one where bias is acceptable and you can still proceed and get value from the AI solution, and which are the ones where it is absolutely not acceptable and you need to stop and figure out an alternate way to solve for that problem.
It's fascinating because to me, this is starting to sound, and I agree with you, like the machines we build are in large part reflections upon ourselves, especially when we're talking about coding and software. I mean, that's a creative process. I don't know that everybody views it that way, but I think of it very similar to creating any kind of creative work. It's a reflection of your process and your, the things that are important to you, the things you've prioritized. And it makes me think of how we're in an era now where, I'm getting a little in the weeds here, but we're in an era where we're more likely to address things like mental health and the fact that we need to be mindful and we need to improve ourselves. And it's almost like taking that same approach, but applying that sort of thinking to designing a system so that we are being mindful to create the best system for whatever purpose it is it's intended to address.
Yeah, you've got it exactly right. The way I think about it is how can we reduce the unintended consequences, right? We know there are going to be risks associated with it. How are we going to have a discussion prior to putting the solution out into the world and then, see all the negative impacts? Can we have a proactive discussion as part of your project planning meeting or your design meeting, right, to proactively identify what are the ways this could go wrong and fix it? Jonathan, the easiest example that I can give is we are living in this very interesting era where, AI as a core technology is developing and, there are all these, the value that you're getting from it, and then there are all these negative things that can happen. So think about, way back when the cars were first invented, right? We didn't even have proper roads. We didn't have seat belts. We didn't have speed limits, right? And we're in that phase where there are cars running on the road. They're taking us from point A to point B faster. So we want to use it, but we don't have the seat belts put in place. We don't have the speed limits set in place. So you're going to see accidents, but we are humans. We are going to learn from it, and we are going to come up with those speed limits. We're going to figure out what are those guardrails. And it is going, you know, we are going to, you know, achieve a point where, you know, we have those guardrails in place so that you can run with AI faster. It's just that this interim phase is when, you know, we have to figure it all out in tandem while it's running in the real world causing accidents.
Yeah. And in some cases, those accidents can be things where you have it maybe in a test environment and you think, oh, this isn't behaving the way I thought it was. But, you know, thank goodness it hasn't been deployed out in the real world or within your company's processes. So you think, oh, well, it didn't wipe out all of our revenue because it's in a test environment. And in other cases, I see some companies, I'm not going to name names, Bina. I'm not going to put anyone on blast here. But I have seen some companies that have taken that kind of idea and applied it in specific deployments of technology where there can have some real world negative consequences to end users. And that to me is always a concern. Yeah. I find it hits me wrong.
Yes, and that's the reality of how we've evolved as a technology in the technology space. It's a bunch of, you know, technologists coming together and building these cool new shiny technologies. Look, I am a technologist in my DNA, my training, and it's very easy to just focus on all the good things it can do. But with AI, now that realization has hit, you need other skill sets at the table, whether it is the social scientists, philosophers, legal and compliance, to help us figure out those seatbelts and the lanes, you know, because technologists by themselves cannot do it. So you'll see more of the discussions coming around ethics, and which is resulting in new roles and new jobs, which becomes core and part of your engineering process. Right. So that scope of who is involved in designing and developing AI is definitely increasing. And the other big part, you know, and this has been a challenge ever since I started in tech, you know, there's a lack of diversity in tech. It's a reality. Right. But unfortunately, because AI is so closely tied to human intelligence, if you don't have enough diversity from, you know, not only from a gender, race, ethnicity perspective, but even a diversity of thought, right? The AI solution you build is not going to be as robust as it could be if you had a diverse team at the table, right? You've probably heard of that classic example of, you know, the robotic vacuums, right? How it was designed and how it was built out. And then in the Eastern cultures, it's normal to sleep on the floor and it sucked up somebody who's sleeping their hair because it was never trained on it. It didn't come to the discussion. And it was being designed because nobody was there from that culture, right? So I think, the realization that you need more diversity at the table, you need more controls in place, it's all coming to the forefront. I definitely see companies addressing it, but the DNA till now has been, oh, look at all the cool things this technology can do. Let's go put it out, right? But I do think, you know, companies are getting mindful about it. And hopefully we'll reduce the number of unintended consequences.
Yeah, I see the same thing reflected in the open source community, where you have an open source approach to developing software. And because it's open and anyone interested and capable can contribute, ideas get tested very quickly, new perspectives get incorporated very quickly, things that are working stick around, things that don't work get improved. And the way I've described it to other people is if you have a closed-off garden that you're working on, you're only as good as the smart people who happen to work for you. And if you go with this other approach where you purposefully open it up, which is like the biggest version of let's try and get as much diversity of thought in here as possible, you don't have that limitation because you've just said, well, now the world is, I mean, it's not the whole world, but effectively the world can contribute if they wish. And I 100% agree. I think having that diversity is absolutely key to creating solutions that work for as many people and as many potential uses of that technology as possible. I, being a white man in the United States, I am essentially the catered to audience for a lot of tech. And so I've seen how things that were made to work really well for me do not work for some other people. And that's such a tiny little microcosm when we're looking at, you know, the grand scope of tech, which goes so far beyond just consumer electronics. I absolutely agree that that diversity is required if we're going to have AI that is truly trustworthy.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and it's never as straightforward as we tend to simplify it down to, right? Like when we talk about explainability, there are real challenges, and those are real business challenges on even when you go down the open source route, right? A lot of time, if you go too much on the explainability path, you know, you have to share data and algorithms, and those are strategic assets, and it can result in compromising your company's IP, right? It can result in, you know, security hacks, because the more explainable you make it, it is more susceptible to manipulation if its functionality is fully understood. The privacy aspect of it, prioritizing explainability, and, you know, how do you make sure you hit a balance of where you are making sure you're mitigating the risk, but at the same time protect your organizational IP. There is no one single answer. It is for the stakeholders to come together and discuss it and identify what that balance is, because it's going to be different depending on your business.
Bina, it seems to me like you're saying the real world is a complicated place and there's a lot of different shades of complexity to it, and that I can't just simply summarize it in a black and white approach, which I greatly appreciate. And that's interesting to me, too. I'm glad to have that perspective because, again, like as a communicator for tech, I know that I, too, fall into the same sort of pitfalls of oversimplifying for the purposes of trying to get a concept across, because to really dive into it, you start to feel like there are so many threads that you can't see the rope, and that or you can't see the forest for the trees, if you prefer. But that's very important to remember, and I think it is a great reminder that, again, like we said at the top, that the use for this technology kind of defines the approach that you need to take in order to make certain that you're getting the result that you want. From a really high level, can you kind of talk about your concept of what it is? This is almost a trick question because there's so many different variations, but what an organization's process would be when considering to implement AI solutions, like high level approach?
Yes. Historically, it's always been, you know, how can we use AI to solve this business problem? And what's the ROI? What, you know, how much profits are we going to increase by doing this? Or how much costs are we going to save by doing this? Trust me, I've done those projects, and you know that's how, you know, every conversation starts, because we want to make use technology to drive more business value, right? Whether it is through customer engagement, optimizing our existing process, and so on. I think the discussion that that if you are serious about making your AI trustworthy, the discussion that needs to happen upfront is defining what does trustworthy AI mean for my organization. Right. And it could be different depending on the organization. It could be different depending on the use case. But having those high level principles, and there are plenty of principles out there. There are plenty of frameworks out there. But I think every organization needs to think about what are the key pillars that they agree upon and that they would never want to violate. Right. And once you have those, then the next step is to decide and to make sure every employee within your organization understands it. Because it's not just your IT team, it's not just the engineers or the data scientists who need to understand ethics. It's that marketing account person who is looking at using an AI solution, buying it from a vendor to use it within your company. they need to make sure that they are asking the questions which ensure trustworthiness. And is the software they're buying, has it been tested for fairness? What was it tested for? So every employee within the organization needs to understand, what does trustworthy AI mean for my company, and how do I use it in my role? So role-specific training. And then the other crucial factor to decide, and we've seen variations of it in the industry, is, you know, whether it is getting a chief AI ethics officer or setting up an AI ethics advisory board, right? Making sure that there is somebody who's responsible to keep this moving within the organization is super important. That's more from a people perspective. And then the last thing is really looking at your existing processes. I don't think you need to completely come up with new processes or new controls, but just adding in a trustworthy check in your existing engineering processes or in your existing development process or your procurement process, to make sure you're checking for the trustworthiness of any AI that tool that you buy or that you build. You know, having, in addition to the ROI, spend 10% of your time to brainstorm on what are the ways this could go wrong, right? And capture it. And when you build that technology, put those guardrails in place. Now, it is guaranteed it is impossible to identify all the possible ways it could go wrong. But even if you get, 75% of the ways it could go wrong, it is better than not thinking about it and not addressing it. So there is a very comprehensive way you can do it, but it is all easy. It fits in with the existing trainings and processes that you already have in your business, right?
Bina, I gotta say, like, as someone who is a technologist and coming at this from that angle, that was such a human-centric kind of answer. I really appreciate that. I've had a lot of discussions with various leadership around different companies, and this idea of having that explanation and getting buy-in from different departments so that everyone's on the same page and they have an understanding of the purpose of a tool, how it's going to be implemented, what we expect to get out of it. That's actually crucial for anything, whether it's AI or not. But because I've seen so many examples of companies where you have one department who's like, the business development team wanted us to put this in and I don't understand why. And if they don't understand why, then you don't get as good output on the other end of it. I think making that part of the conversation just as much as, determining the approach to get a trustworthy AI, I think that's absolutely crucial.
Yes. And, a lot of times we think it's a technology problem to fix, right? To build trustworthy AI, you need to, it's a technology problem. It's your data scientists and engineers who should think about it, but that's not the case, right? It's the entire group that needs to come together. And the risk is not just from a technology perspective. It's a brand and reputation risk. There's financial consequences. There's customer satisfaction consequences. There is so many other risks associated with if your AI is not trustworthy.
Bina and I have a little bit more to talk about with AI, but before we get to that, let's take another quick break.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
A spirit of adventure lives inside of us. Nissan's SUVs have the capabilities to transform your spirit of adventure into actual rubber meets the road into the wild, true blue, real life adventure. You just need a Nissan and a plan. Or better yet, just a Nissan. You can hop into a Nissan Rogue and discover what comes next. Don't worry, the Nissan Rogue has your back. Class-exclusive Google built-in is your always-updating assistant to call on for almost anything. Just climb in and go. No need to connect your phone. Google Assistant, Google Maps, and Google Play Store are built right into the 12.3-inch HD touchscreen infotainment system of the new 2024 Nissan Rogue. No matter where you roam, you'll stay connected to home. Life is one huge adventure, and every day is a little one. No matter if the ride you're on is big or small, a Nissan Rogue, Nissan Pathfinder, or Nissan Armada can elevate your adventure and push your limits to something new. Your next adventure is waiting for you. Get in a Nissan SUV and go. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
I remember covering that over in the European Union, there were various departments that were even talking about concepts that, again, are that science fiction far off concept, but even the concept of granting personhood toward sufficiently advanced AI for the purposes of figuring out accountability and responsibility for when something goes wrong. Who gets held accountable when the AI doesn't work right? What's your take on that?
I think, we might reach at that at some point, but in the interim, till we don't have that kind of, rules or laws, I think it's absolutely, one of the components, dimensions of trustworthy AI is defining accountability up front. Mm-hmm. Meaning, if the AI goes wrong, who is accountable for it? Who's going to face a Senate hearing? Who's going to pay the fine? Is it the data scientist who built it? Is it the CIO who approved the project? Is it the CEO or is it a board member, right? So, and the good news with that one, talking about accountability upfront makes everybody proactively think about the ways it could go wrong, because you don't want to put your name on something that might go wrong and you've not thought about it. So until we get to that, machine citizen rights level, I think, even today, there is a dimension of trustworthiness, which is really around defining, putting in a name for who is accountable when your AI goes wrong.
I agree that that's important. I have seen some of those Senate hearings with various tech people sitting in the seat. And I know that if I were in one of these conversations, I would not want to be that person. And making sure we specifically define who that person is and that it's not me would be top of my priority list. Well, I'm also curious then. So we've seen in a similar sense some movement on things like autonomous cars. And on a similar note, I'll tell you about accountability, where we're starting to see more governments try and consider who is accountable for any accidents that might have happened under a car's autonomous or semi-autonomous operation. Obviously, that's been a big point of discussion here in the United States. And this is one of those things. How closely tied do you think do technology experts need to be with, say, politicians who may not have the insight into tech, but yet are also responsible for creating and enacting policy that's going to have an effect on tech? Do you see there being more crosstalk?
Unlike the car example and the seatbelt and speed limit example, AI does need an understanding of technology. So to come up with those speed limits, it is, and we've honestly entered that era where collaboration is king. right? We have to make sure that regulators and technologists, policymakers, they're collaborating and each one is learning from the other to come up with the best possible guardrails or regulations or laws, because this is not something that can be done in isolation, like that auto speed limit example. So I think we are going to see more, whether it is an entities being set up who drive this collaboration, but there is definitely, you know, across the globe, technologists being pulled together, whether it's as an advisory committee or a council, that is happening now. And I do think we will start seeing results of that collaboration coming out sooner rather than later. I also believe that just like I was talking about, every organization should train all their employees. I think everybody who is involved in the regulation making process should have a basic understanding of AI, a level of AI fluency, or, you know, an understanding of what does machine learning really mean? What can it do? What can it not do? So I call it the AI literacy training, right? So I think that's like ground stakes to drive a productive collaboration. But I think this is a time for people like you and me, Jonathan, to really step up and make sure that we are collaborating closely so that it's an informed and relevant regulation or relevant policy that's put together.
I think relevance is absolutely the right word to use. Again, I'm not putting anyone on blast, but there have been plenty of stories of people, whether they are in the regulatory field or general politics, where their level of tech savvy is probably not even measurable based upon some of the things we've seen. And that is terrifying when you realize the reach and the effect of technology, and how if you have a misunderstanding of it, you can tackle something that's not really a problem, but you've built it up as if it were, while completely missing things that we absolutely need to pay closer attention to. So I do try to make literacy one of those things that I push for, and hopefully I succeed more often than I fail.
Yeah, it's we live in this era now that at least in the corporate world, right? We are seeing more and more boards getting more technology savvy leaders, or leaders who understand technology, so that because every company uses technology, uses AI, no matter which industry they are in, right? So we're seeing that composition of boards changing, right? And I don't think we're very far from the time when, having a basic AI or technology understanding will be almost a prerequisite, right? Again, as I said, we're living in this interim crazy phase where there's a lot of things happening and we don't necessarily have all the foundation set up. The exciting news is for our generation, Jonathan, this is our opportunity, right? The work we do today is going to be setting the foundation for future generations. So I think, having that basic AI literacy, no, it's not set up, but, We now understand that, everybody who is involved in policymaking or regulations need to have that basic understanding. So let's make sure that, they have that available.
See, that's great. It's looking at something that I have defined as a problem and you have defined as an opportunity, which I needed to hear, honestly, because that's the kind of optimism that I find really motivating. Beena, thank you.
Thank you
so much for being on the show. Your book, Trustworthy AI, I have a copy coming to me. I have not yet been able to read it. I am so eager to go cover to cover on this, because just this conversation has really energized me. And, when you have a podcast about tech and you've done more than 1,700 episodes, sometimes you feel like, oh, I've said everything there is to say about that. And then I have a conversation like this and I realize, this is an iceberg situation, and I've just touched the very tip of it. There's an entire world beneath the surface of the water that I haven't even scratched. So thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Jonathan, this was a very energizing conversation for me as well. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Once again, I have to thank Beena Amanath for coming on the show. I was thrilled at this opportunity when I first got the email suggesting that I have her on my show, because to be totally clear, her team reached out to me and I just didn't even think about that possibility. I am so glad that I followed up with that. I do plan on having more interviews on this show in the near future. I've got a couple more lined up. I'm going to try and do that more frequently. I'm going to be transparent with all of you. It is very tricky for me because scheduling is tricky. People are very busy and it gives me a lot of anxiety. Just being absolutely transparent with all of you out there. The process of scheduling gives me a lot of anxiety. So it's something I'm working through and I'm trying to get more people on the show. One, because there's so many interesting people out there. And just with this conversation with Bina, I really got that feeling of, I need this because it is giving me more perspective than what I have. And I don't want tech stuff to just be a narrow laser focus of what Jonathan thinks about tech. Secondly, I think that it benefits the show, obviously, to have that extra voice in there. And that means that it becomes more enjoyable because despite my enormous ego, I realize I cannot be the most entertaining person in all the world, no matter how hard I try. So hope you all enjoyed this. If you have suggestions for future topics, maybe you have suggestions for future guests I should try and get on the show, reach out to me. I promise I will do my best to get that person on the show. Can't promise that it'll happen, but I'll try. And I'll work through this weird stress I get whenever it comes down to trying to schedule things. And just to be clear, Bina was amazing because we actually tried to record that interview on one day, but had a technical issue, ended up having to reschedule. She was amazing and was really good about all that. So despite all of my anxiety, everything went great, which I think this isn't meant to be a therapy session, but I think that's very typical for me where I get worked up about something. Turns out that something wasn't really that big a deal. It was just the anticipation of it that was the problem. So if any of you out there suffer from something like that, you know, you have that same sort of experience. Listen, I got your back. I know how it is. It is frustrating, but you can do it. All right. Pep talk over, episode over. Hope you enjoyed it. I am on vacation for the rest of the week, so you should expect some classic episodes for the rest of this week, but that doesn't mean they're bad. Just means they're old. Just like me. I'm old, but I'm not bad. And I will talk to you again. Oh, if you want to reach out to me, you gotta do it on Twitter. The handle for the show is TechStuffHSW. There, now I get to say the end catchphrase. I'll talk to you again really soon.
Tech Stuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without finger sticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.